Back in 1991, the KU Medical Center began looking into new ways for doctors to reach patients in remote areas. And they made Kansas one of the first states to offer what's called telemedicine. In the past two decades, the technology of telemedicine has come a long way, using video conferencing and tools for transmitting data electronically. Looking forward, with the arrival of Google Fiber, the potential for future growth is immense, saving time, money, and improving care for patients. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's program, we'll look at the many applications of telemedicine for patients in rural and urban areas, for conditions ranging from mental health to oncology. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Advances in telemedicine over the last several decades have set new precedents in the field of healthcare, help specialists save time, and change the meaning of the question of whether or not there's a doctor in the house. But where do we go from here? With rising healthcare costs and lower technology costs, what are we checking for in our local listings on the small screen? This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. With us to discuss these advances in telemedicine and its modern applications are our in-studio guest today from the University of Kansas Medical Center, Dr. Ryan Spaulding, Director of the Center for Telemedicine and Telehealth. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
Dr. Evelyn Nelson, a psychologist and also assistant director at that center.
Good morning.
And Dr. Gary Doolittle, oncologist at the University of Kansas Medical Center. We'll start with Dr. Gary Doolittle.
Good morning.
I'm sure you've had no references at all to your name over the years.
Once or twice in the last 20 years
of
practice.
Maybe once or twice.
Someone's made a comment about my last name and the Dr. Doolittle bit. Yeah, once or twice.
But we will confirm here on Central Standard that you do not work with animals. You actually are an oncologist.
I do not work with animals. I am a medical oncologist.
Before we get into the thick of it, who is your favorite Dr. Doolittle? Jerry Lewis, Eddie Murphy?
I'm sorry. I'm of the Rex Harrison era.
Rex Harrison.
Yeah, that tells you how old I am. Rex Harrison, the first Dr. Doolittle. He's the real Dr. Doolittle.
The real Dr. Doolittle. Well, you've been working, Dr. Doolittle, with patients via telemedicine since 1994. What made you start interfacing with patients this way?
Right. Good question. Yeah, I started in 1994 really out of a need that was voiced from a rural Kansas community from Hayes, Kansas. They had a large number of cancer patients that had been cared for previously by an oncologist that was located in the Hayes community. Their oncologist moved to Texas. They needed some assistance. That all came together at the same time that KU was launching a telemedicine program, and I agreed to staff a clinic and study telemedicine for 18 months, and that 18-month project actually turned into an 18-year practice.
This is not something that you had imagined coming out of medical school, a telemedicine practice.
No, not at all. Honestly, there wasn't. The term was there, but not known to me. And in the early 90s, there was a resurgence of the whole concept of telemedicine in the healthcare community. And KU was kind of on the front of that second wave. And I joined the project as it was being launched.
Did you find it to be more effective as you got into it, dealing with patients in these rural communities?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was actually really nerve-wracking
at
the very beginning of the practice. I can remember very clearly seeing patients in person because I would fly to Hayes every other Monday, and then I'd have a telemedicine clinic on Mondays and Thursdays. And I can remember thinking, I'm going to see you in person next Monday after having done a telemedicine evaluation the prior Thursday. And that was the way I got used to it, and I became more comfortable with it because very early on it was clear that my telemedicine assessments were identical to those that I was performing in person. I thought it would take a good 6 months to a year to get comfortable with it. But honestly, between the excellent health care that was present in the Hayes Cancer Center at the time and the technology, it was really a matter of 2 to 3 months before the practice fell into place and really felt like we were practicing good medicine.
Let's bring in Dr. Ryan Spaulding at this point. Dr. Doolittle gives us his anecdotal evidence about how he settled into a telemedicine practice. What have been the advances of telemedicine over the last 20 years since KU got involved, Dr. Spaulding?
Yes, that's another great question. So when Dr. Doolittle started, the technology, for example, was hooked up on very large, expensive phone lines that most people did not have. And so we had to order those special. They were very expensive. The camera equipment wasn't quite as advanced as it is today. Of course, today everything is HD and high definition, that means, and very clear, very crisp pictures. The internet then came along in the early 2000s and became more common. So that allowed us to really connect to any kind of facility that had a broadband internet connection. So the technology came from being very expensive and specially ordered to being quite common technology that a lot of organizations and even people have in their homes. So it allowed us to do telemedicine just about anywhere. And it really advanced the practice.
So the internet opened up the field of telemedicine in a way that was more user-friendly.
Exactly.
And
that's
right. Lower cost as well.
Absolutely.
Dr. Evelyn Nelson, psychologist, how has the process of telemedicine made it easier for you or worked for you?
Well, I think I'm fortunate to work with kids, and kids are naturally excited and comfortable with the technology, so they really have adapted quickly. They like seeing themselves on screen, and then with them, their parents have been so appreciative of not having to drive hours to come into the medical center, or just they feel more comfortable in their school or other setting in meeting with the psychologist.
How does it differ from in-person consultations? What are the challenges of practicing psychology from afar?
Well, I think that I'll give two answers to that question. One is it's overwhelming the same. I think it works when you take the same good strategies you have in your on-site clinic and use that over the televideo. So a lot of it's the same. The part that's a little different is the kids do like seeing themselves on screen. They're there at school or at a place they're comfortable with their school nurse. So I think sometimes they may disclose more. They may feel more comfortable. And often the parent feels more comfortable. They haven't had to navigate parking. They haven't had to do all that. And it's very convenient for the child and family.
I'll bring in Dr. Doolittle back. Does the presence of telemedicine, that barrier, disrupt or aid in the connections, the personal connections to your patients? This is, after all, about their health or their health diagnoses.
Yeah, again, a good question. In my experience in the cancer world, we care for patients as part of a team. So, yes, I'm the medical oncologist, and I'm the doctor that is a member of the team, but at the distant site, we have nurses, nurses aides, nurse practitioners, other members of the healthcare community that are all part of this as well. I honestly have not met the cancer patient yet that could not be evaluated over the telemedicine system. So much of what goes into the diagnosis or the treatment plan comes from the history alone. And then I rely on the clinical skills of the on-site nurse practitioner that's doing the examination. And in the cancer world, so much of what we do involves imaging with CAT scans, MRIs, other tests, such that our evaluations are, they're different. The data that you pull together is different, but the outcome is the same.
Dr. Spaulding, is being a specialist an extra complement to a telemedicine practice? Because by the time they've gotten to a specialist such as Dr. Doolittle, they know what they're expecting. It's not their primary care physician necessarily on the other end of that screen.
Right, and that is a key point because most communities in Kansas and in most states have at least a primary care physician or provider. So the idea is that we can provide the specialists that are not available locally, so we can complement the care there and not really take over the care, and that's a really key point.
Does that work in psychology, Dr. Nels?
Yes, I very much agree with what Dr. Spaulding said. We're looking to fill a gap. If there's an access gap and children or families are not finding this service or that they're having challenges reaching to that service, then that's a good fit for telemedicine.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Javelani LaFall. This broadcast is focusing on a new way to see your doctor without actually being in the same room as him or her. It's called telemedicine. Our in-studio guests today are from the University of Kansas Medical Center, Dr. Ryan Spaulding, director of the Center for Telemedicine and Telehealth there, Dr. Evelyn Nelson, a psychologist, and Dr. Gary Doolittle, an oncologist. Kansas City, what are some of the factors that make seeing a doctor a challenge? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org if you have any questions or comments on the field of telemedicine and whether you'd want to use it or not. What are some of the factors, Dr. Doolittle, that could lead a patient to need telemedicine? You've been in for a while.
Yeah, fair question. Again, as Dr. Nelson just stated, we've really looked at the technology to address a specific need. It wasn't like we rolled out a telemedicine program and said, okay, now how are we going to use this? A specific clinical need arises, and then we look to the technology to try to support the connection between that individual in need and the healthcare provider. It has always been driven by what the need is at the distance site.
Dr. Spaulding, what factors along the lines of age or the distance from the nearest specialist or a reliance on public transportation or remote site factor into a telemedicine practice?
Well,
the most common factor.
It generally is distance.
Distance.
I mean, at least for our rural practices. And we don't have a hard cutoff, but we generally think if people are within about an hour of the med center, they might be able to get here, even though we have some other local projects. But it's really the people who are from southwest Kansas, northwest Kansas, very southern Kansas, who have a long, long drive ahead of them. And in the case of patients like Dr. Doolittle's, who sometimes are very ill and are just comfortable going to their local hospital or local clinic and seeing him that way, rather than try to drive and spend the night here in Kansas City and get a room and have a lot of expense doing all those things. So it really is distance. Age, I don't think, has been an issue at all. It really crosses the lifespan. So, you know, Dr. Nelson sees young kids and Gary sees older folks, and it just really covers the whole lifespan.
Dr. Nelson, how does telemedicine make healthcare administration more efficient? Dr. Doolittle mentioned the use of nurses. We're going to get into the use of data a little later in the broadcast. The whole process of seeing a patient, signing them in, getting them in, treating them, how does telemedicine streamline that process?
I think it's a real plus in terms of consistent attendance. Again, the child is at school and then they go directly to the school nurse's office, so they're not having to have the parent take off work, get in the car, drive, have the appointment, drive back, and all those steps that are challenging for families. So I think that part is a plus. I will say a lot of it is the same, though. They still fill out the paperwork that we need, all the questionnaires. We still want to get all the data we can to really make the best diagnosis and treatment plan with the family. I did want to say one thing to follow up what Dr. Spaulding was saying. I do think it can reduce some stigma in my area with mental health. No one really knows why is the child coming in for a visit. It's kind of their own business. And I think it is a comfortable place and can be a place that decreases some of the stigma.
And, of course, talking is one of the main tools of your particular specialty, Dr. Nelson. So that might work. But, Dr. Doolittle, what's lost over telemedicine with yours, which is based on talking but also based on diagnoses, based on physical ailments? Can you possibly miss symptoms over telemedicine?
Yeah, actually, that was a real concern of mine up front in starting the practice. There will be something critical in the physical that I will not have an opportunity to evaluate. But in reality, and there are studies to back up this statement, 85 to 90% of what goes into the differential diagnosis or what is ailing a particular patient comes from the history alone. And the history really is the same. It's talking heads over a couple of monitors. So that piece is identical. I do rely on the local healthcare team. I rely on family members just like I do in my clinic here. It's not unusual for a patient to say, oh, everything went great with the chemotherapy, and to have his wife sitting next to him shaking her head like, no, not really. I mean, he may be telling you that, but what he's experiencing is something really different. And then last, I would again mention that so much of what goes into our treatment planning relies on objective testing, laboratory tests, CAT scans, studies that demonstrate whether the disease is responding or not. So even if I'm not able to physically lay on hands, I have an objective measurement to determine or to let me know how the disease is responding.
So that scenario you just mentioned with a spouse in the background shaking their head based on what a patient's told you about their own experience, that's something that is a plus.
Absolutely.
With telemedicine.
I wouldn't get that with a phone
call. Right, or in person, rather.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a definite plus. One of my biggest concerns about this was breaking bad news, or how would the cancer patient feel if I'm trying to or have to give them news that is not what any of us wanted. The cancer is getting worse. And what has worked so well over the years is the local healthcare team. The nurses, family members are all with the patient at the other end. I've had some patients that have family in Kansas City and join me at the telemedicine studio on our site, so they can all participate like they would any clinic visit.
Almost like a talk show.
Almost.
Almost, except it's health-related. Christian writes us in at centralstandard@kcur.org to ask, and I'll direct this to Dr. Spaulding here, what are some of the administrative and billing issues that arise if the patient is being seen in their home with telemedicine versus at a remote rural clinic? That's a question.
That's a great question, because that's a big area of debate, if you will, right now. In the home right now, it's really hard to bill for a telemedicine visit. And generally, the way that billing occurs, or at least the billing process, is that CMS, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, really sort of leads the way in terms of how insurers and Medicaid in the states determine what they will pay for. And right now, CMS has decided that they're not quite ready to pay for in-home telemedicine, whereas it does pay for facility or hospital-based telemedicine. So that probably is the next generation of telemedicine moving into the home. And preventive care in particular will be a big area in the home in the next several years and then long-term.
Kansas City, are you interested in seeing a doctor over telemedicine? What are some of the factors that make seeing your doctor a challenge? Would you want to see your doctor over a television screen? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Nelson, you work mostly with children, but do you find in your talks with Dr. Doolittle, who works with the elderly and older patients, do you find that the adaption or the affinity for technology is different among younger patients?
Again, that's a great question. And especially early on, Ryan and Gary may comment on this, we did a lot of satisfaction data work. And what we found was young folks like telemedicine, general age folks like telemedicine, and elders like telemedicine. It was kind of surprising at the time, but we really have a good database in our own program and then nationally that folks in general do like telemedicine regardless of age.
Dr. Spaulding, what are the most cantankerous of these groups? What is the most, skeptical demographic? Because the kids will say, hey, I'm on TV, and an older person might say, hey, this is a neat doohickey that I'm on. I'm seeing the doctor. I don't even have to get out of bed. Is the middle group that wants to see, feel, and be involved in their own medical process, is that a harder sell to middle age and, middle age adults?
We haven't really seen that. As Dr. Nelson mentioned, the lifespan across all the ages seems to adopt it quite well. The barriers tend to still be more logistics in general than the population or the desire for telemedicine. So, as I mentioned, billing in some cases can still be a challenge, especially in the home. The technology, getting that in place and getting it to be used and recognized by the local healthcare team as well as the specialist here at the Med Center. So there are some adoption issues, some just logistical issues. Occasionally, a very small community may not even have the internet service that we really need to make it work. So there are those issues more than the population issues, I would say.
Dr. Dula?
Yeah, I would also add to so much of it depends upon the circumstances and the comparative. Would you like to see me on telemedicine, or would you rather drive 4 hours from Hays to Kansas City to see me? And most of the time, patients will look me straight in the eye and say, you're not worth the drive. I'll take the telemedicine. You know, on the other hand, if they knew I was going to be at an outreach clinic the following Monday and they call on a Friday, they may say, let's just wait till you get here next Monday and we'll go over things then. It's really it's a very much a situational response. I've had young people that didn't like the technology and octogenarians that come in and just kind of run the place when their visit's ongoing. So there just really does not seem to be any particular age that either accepts or declines to use it.
How about among peers? Is telemedicine an easier sell to physicians?
And that's
among your peers.
Again, a good question. And one of the challenges when the project was really getting launched in the early 90s was bringing practitioners on board that could serve some of these communities. And Ryan would be better now in terms of telling you the challenges, because we do have to recruit for subspecialists to do work on the system. Having said that, it is very much a part of the culture at the University of Kansas Med Center now, and not near the challenges of bringing practitioners on board. Again, a generation of medical students going through that knows about telemedicine, knows about it through their residency and on into practice. It has become, I would say, easier. Is that what you would say, Ryan?
Absolutely. And what I would also add is that we've talked mostly about physicians and psychology today, but a lot of other specialists like dietitians or nursing specialists or other health professions like OTs or PTs also have used telemedicine to reach out to patients across the state. And those folks tend to maybe have time that's a little more flexible sometimes than the physicians. Physicians are really pressed for time and covering hospital rounds and so on and so forth. But the health professions folks have really latched on to telemedicine and are using it in much the same way that the physicians use it, but for a whole different range of health concerns and educational issues that really also help the healthcare of the community.
For the doctors who find that they don't want to use telemedicine, because I'm assuming there are doctors that don't want to use it, what are their arguments against using telemedicine?
Well, as Dr. Doolittle mentioned, I think early on in particular, there was still a need to want to put hands, do a hands-on examination during the visit. There are also just time issues, as I mentioned, or clinic issues. One of the challenges we have is that the telemedicine system doesn't exist in every single clinic space at the Med Center, so we have special rooms that are set up, and that adds a little bit of a time issue to the visit, whereas if a patient just comes to a clinic, that issue does not exist. So we're still working on those workflow issues, those clinic flow issues that we hope will really counteract those arguments that some of the providers have.
Have you allowed in the telemedicine infrastructure for the event of technical difficulties?
Right. We do have that occasionally. We don't like to admit it, but probably about 1 or 2% of the time there's a technical issue. And fortunately, most of the time it's usually a human issue. The system might be turned off, or maybe they turned the volume down and can't hear the doctor talking. So usually those are very easily fixed. And back when I mentioned that we used to use phone lines, we could have some much more difficult problems if those weren't working, but these days it's not as much of an issue.
What are other parts of the country or world are exploring telemedicine?
So most states in the United States have a telemedicine program, if not more than one. A lot of them still are university-based, although they are starting to grow beyond just universities. So every state has a program, and we know and work with a lot of the other states just because it's kind of a small community so far. But also most countries have a telemedicine program of some kind. In the UK, for example, it's part of the national health system. and they're trying to use it and expand telemedicine to really reduce cost and improve care across the United Kingdom. So, again, most countries, and we talked earlier about third world countries using cell phones in particular because the cell service is so much better than internet service.
We're talking telemedicine today with our guest from the University of Kansas Medical Center, Dr. Evelyn Nelson, psychologist, also assistant director of the center, Dr. Gary Doolittle, oncologist, and Dr. Ryan Spaulding, whose voice you just heard, who is the director for the Center of Telemedicine and Telehealth. Kansas City, are you resistant to using telemedicine as a healthcare venue, or would it make your life easier? Share your thoughts at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. After this quick break, when we return, we'll have our guest doctors give us a step-by-step process of how a typical telemedicine visit works, and we'll get into those advances in technology in the fields of telemedicine a little bit more when we return. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. As far back as 1997, local physicians in Kansas launched an interactive home healthcare program to evaluate the use of in-home telemedicine to provide healthcare for elderly and disabled people. Connecting through local cable systems and using a base station staffed by a telemedicine nurse with a modified television in the home, 38 patients began their care in that program. Today, that program has grown exponentially and is part of many pilot programs at the University of Kansas Medical Center, celebrating its 20th anniversary in the field of telemedicine. And we have with us as our guest to explain these advances and their applications in the modern world, Dr. Evelyn Nelson, psychologist and assistant director of the Center for Telemedicine and Telehealth. Dr. Ryan Spaulding is the director of that center, and Dr. Gary Doolittle is an oncologist, and they all join us in this second half of an hour. Telemedicine was particularly effective in rural communities, Dr. Doolittle. How has it evolved to urban communities? And we'll go around the bend here and talk about that.
Yeah. Again, a good question. Yeah, I think in Kansas, we had such a strong need for subspecialty care in the rural areas. That's where our primary focus was. But as the technology is changing and bandwidth to the home is increasing, we'll see a strong shift to home-based care. And I think a lot of that has to do with the technology, but I think an awful lot of it has to do with access to the healthcare system. As we look at healthcare reform and the shifts that will occur and the number of patients that for the first time will actually be within the healthcare system, trying to take care of such a large number of people is going to be a challenge, and we need to look at innovative ways to take care of them and harness this technology to make that happen.
Have you noticed anything, Dr. Doolittle, in treating patients remotely that you might have missed in treating them in person? Does it work in the reverse sometimes?
Good question. I don't know that particular scenario has unfolded for me. I do think this. I think some of it has to do with the rural Kansan temperament, and I think some of it has to do with the technology, but patients are very clear about what their wishes are and the types of treatments that they are interested in. And, you know, they are also more comfortable, I think, with a watchful waiting approach. But I don't think I've ever had anything where something really different or unusual was picked up on the telemedicine system versus what might have happened in person.
You said the rural Kansan is a unique figure. How is a rural patient different?
Yeah, I have really come to admire the rural Kansan. And I had my practice in Kansas City, obviously an urban practice. In the rural sector, I mean, the work ethic is amazing. I always tell a story of a farmer that came in with a lymphoma, and I really wanted him to get his treatment started. And he said, yeah, I'll be happy to do that, but not until harvest. I've got harvest, got 3 weeks, and I'll be back. And sure enough, no chemotherapy, no treatment for his cancer. He went out and took care of harvest.
Wow.
So, I mean, amazing work ethic.
We're going to go to John in KC. Questions and comments about telemedicine on Central Standard today. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much. Just wanted to start off with an aside, and that was we touched upon billing and reimbursement and how that works in the telemedicine context. There probably also is a thought to deal with in terms of licensing there as well. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. But the main comment was that I just wanted to note that the degree to which this has kind of taken on an international cast, and that is that, for instance, Dr. Doolittle and his colleagues jumped in to help out a visit by an international delegation back in the mid-90s. The delegation was from Malaysia. And based on that sort of engagement, the Malaysian delegation went back to the Ministry of Health there and designed really a whole national program that kind of took the telemedicine concept forward into more of a telehealth concept, in which they would view any sort of electronic interchange over distance to be important and powerful within their context. And so they ultimately designed the idea that they would want to have everybody in the country with their own sort of health and wellness plan that they'd be working against online and communicating both via interactive video, as we traditionally design or define telemedicine, but likewise through online interactions with their own health record and their own health plan and so on. And I just think that broader definition is something I'm sure the speakers would certainly embrace, and it's become very important, I think, worldwide now.
Thank you, John, for your comments. Let's take this opportunity to address some of John's comments there. What's the difference between telemedicine, Dr. Spaulding, and this broader definition of telehealth?
Right, and I think John touched on that. And so we've thought of telemedicine over the years as really the interactive video interaction between a provider and a patient, usually a physician and a patient, whereas telehealth is a much broader definition to include those online technologies and even what we call store and forward technologies, such as taking an image or an X-ray and forwarding that on to the specialist to look at either right away or maybe a little later, the asynchronous technologies. So the telehealth is a broader definition that includes a whole range of technologies, which are all starting to merge together in some ways. So as John indicated, Dr. Doolittle might see a patient, but then be able to pull up the patient's electronic health record, the CAT scan images, maybe some other lab work or anything else, all electronically, and not have to shuffle papers or look through a paper chart. All of that is merging together into a single encounter, if you will.
Now, what kind of medical data can be transmitted electronically over these telemedicine and telehealth environments?
Right. So most all the things that I mentioned are now available online in some format. Now, some of the smaller facilities may not yet have everything in a digital form, but that's the direction we are headed. So in Hayes, Kansas, for instance, where Dr. Doolittle sees patients, he can log into that electronic health record that's at the Hayes Medical Center and use the patient's record just as it currently stands and look at all the images. Look at the lab work, lab results, look at the history and physical. Any other information that would typically be available is available electronically. So all those data can be sent. But then even in a maybe a live format or real-time format, vital signs, for example, can be sent. So if we wanted to do a blood pressure and have that sent directly to Dr. Doolittle, that can be done electronically too, or a blood glucose or some of those other parameters.
Would they have to have a machine there?
That's
in
right.
The home or at the studio to transmit it to.
Right, and that scenario is actually more common in the home where there may not be a nurse or some other health provider. So home telehealth, as we've touched on just a little bit, is really the next generation of healthcare. And it usually involves some sort of touchscreen device that has a blood pressure cuff attached to it and a scale and a glucometer and maybe a pulse oximeter and all those attach to this device and automatically upload to a nurse or to another healthcare professional who's monitoring those in real time.
Dr. Doolittle, Dr. Nelson, how common is emailing back and forth with your telemedicine patients or their spouses or their loved ones? In the case of the kids, Dr. Nelson, their parents?
We more follow our institution's rules around email, which
right.
are pretty strict.
Right, so right. HIPAA and things of that
yes.
nature. Yeah.
So it's not a format that we use in our clinic. It's not because they're telemedicine patients. It's more because that's our institutional take on working with mental health patients.
Are there chat windows during these telemedicine sessions? No.
There's not.
Because you're talking.
Right. I think you bring up a good question, though. We always kind of socialize the patient to, hey, only you only I can see you, only you can see me. This isn't being taped and archived. It's sure feasible to tape it, and if we could consent a patient to do that, but
for quality assurance purposes.
Right. And then, you know, separate from the telemedicine world, patients are now choosing actively to email their healthcare providers. So that I can't tell you the exact percentages in my own practice, but I get emails from patients that are out in the state that I follow by telemedicine. I get emails from patients that I see in my traditional practice here on the Westwood campus. So, that is becoming more and more acceptable, even if we don't necessarily respond.
Right. The incoming is not something that you could necessarily stop or something that you necessarily discourage. But the outgoing is where it becomes a compliance issue and, you know, answering back and creating that paper trail. Kansas City, are you excited to see future innovations in medical treatments like telemedicine? Would you rather visit your doctor via television? Share your thoughts at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Spaulding, what are the best ways that telemedicine connections are hooked up today? You mentioned third world communities becoming more active in the mobile space, medical apps, things of that nature, in-home medical equipment that can be hooked up through a telemedicine pipes, if you will. What are the most common and easy connections for telemedicine?
I would go back to what Dr. Doolittle said. It really does depend on the situation and in the exact application we're going to use. But generally, the internet has become the tool of choice. We use that primarily in Kansas because it's pretty widely available. It works very well. We have a state network in Kansas that's for healthcare purposes, so it's high bandwidth, and the hospitals are all connected to it. It works very, very well. Now, I would say, like in Alaska, for example, they have to use satellites because it's very hard to run internet all over through the mountains and over such great distances. So they use a lot of satellites there. Telephone is not widely used anymore, although in the home telehealth devices can be hooked to a telephone line or an internet line. So in some cases where internet may not be, we still use the phone line. But again, I think the internet has made such a huge change in how we do business.
Now I'm going to get real egg-heady here.
Okay.
Is your telemedicine platform, is that an in-house or customized application, or do you use Skype, or do you use Cisco, or do you use some of those other vendors?
We use off-the-shelf technology, not those particular vendors. In Skype, we don't use just because we encrypt our video connections, and so far we haven't figured out if Skype quite encrypts or how they do that. But Skype, I know, is used by some healthcare practitioners in very informal ways. We just use a little more of a dedicated network that's a little more private.
So you do use an off-the-shelf vendor, so right, to speak, but you customize that to your needs at KU.
That's right, and we use the healthcare network in the state that makes it a little more private. And again, it depends on what specialty. But so, for example, some specialties would use electronic otoscope to look in the ear, but like Dr. Doolittle might just use the stethoscope, and those are all electronic as well. And if I could just – I wanted to get one more quick mention in. John asked about licensure, and I think that's also a great question.
The caller that we had earlier, asked about licensure.
So. Yeah, so I wanted to get back to that real quickly. But that is an important issue because most states have a specific licensure for the physicians, and it makes it hard to practice in some other state if the physician doesn't have a license in that state as well. So because of telemedicine, there are some efforts at the national level to make either a national license or make it so that providers can cross state lines, because by definition, telehealth allows that, telemedicine allows that. But there are some hurdles to be overcome.
Is there a way to provide a uniformed reciprocity for doctors in other localities just for telemedicine? Is there a way to do that?
I would say there's a way.
Is there a will?
Yeah, it's just going to depend on a lot of work being done among the societies and the associations that oversee physicians. Gary, jump in here if you'd
like. Well, I think you've stated it very well. Yeah, there is a way, but the will is not necessarily there. And when so few of us are practicing, via telemedicine right now. It probably isn't at the top of their list of things that absolutely need to change to move this forward. Having said that, I do think it's a necessary process that we're going to have to get through if we're going to widely adopt this way of healthcare delivery.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Channel surfing takes on a whole new meaning here as we discuss the benefits and drawbacks of telemedicine as the KU Medical Center celebrates its 20th anniversary as a provider of telemedicine and telehealth services. We've been talking about the distinctions between those two as well with Dr. Gary Doolittle, an oncologist at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Dr. Ryan Spaulding, director of the Center for Telemedicine and Telehealth, and Dr. Evelyn Nelson, a psychologist and assistant director at that center. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. If you have any thoughts on telemedicine or would you like to know more about telemedicine, also, you can share your anecdotes about whether you've ever saw your doctor via a telemedicine connection. We're going to go to Shakshu in St. Joe. Welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, hi. I'm a provider in St. Joseph, Missouri, and I just did an MBA last year, and I was trying to write a business plan on telemedicine. And the issue that I ran into was that if you're licensed in Missouri, to see a patient, you have to examine the patient physically at least once during the course of treatment. And so just your views on how to get, not get around it, but how to factor that in telemedicine services in the Kansas City area.
We were just talking about licensing. Dr. Doolittle, do you want to take that?
To be really honest with you, that really frustrates me because I don't know that is a necessary piece to take care of a patient well. I've had patients that I have followed for literally months and never actually laid hands on them, and their medical care was excellent. I can remember one case in particular of a man with pancreatic cancer, and I met him first on the telemedicine system. We followed him through about 6 months after meeting him. I'm in Hayes, Kansas, and actually meet him in person for the first time. And it wasn't until after the end of the visit that we both realized that was actually the first time that we had seen each other in person. You can practice medicine without that step. And the conventional wisdom is always you need to meet the patient first and then use telemedicine as a backup or as a follow-up. And yet, for those of us that really have practiced like this with any degree of regularity, it's just not a necessary step.
Dr. Spaulding, do you have a suggestion to deal with Shakshu's issue in trying to build a telemedicine practice out but facing this sort of legalese and bureaucratese issues, if you will?
Well, I think you could go the clinical route, which Dr. Doolittle has done, and that is that a hybrid model works so that if the patient can at least make it in once and then follow up by telemedicine, that should be fine. But I think the more difficult route is to change the policy. In most states, that is not the case. You don't have to see a patient in person first and be able to bill for it. So I would just suggest that you work with your telehealth program in Columbia and really try to attack that issue. And as we've said today, the policy is trending toward a more favorable telemedicine climate. So whether it be reimbursement or whether it be these kinds of issues of how you see patients, it's all going to get better, and it's fluid. It's changing all the time.
Dr. Doolittle, take us through, if you will, a typical telemedicine visit.
Happy to. We actually design the telemedicine visit and practice to mirror what we do in person. So we set up blocks of time that are clinic time. For example, Thursday morning from 9 to 12 is telemedicine clinic for Hayes, Kansas. And then there is a template that is developed so that if a patient needs to be seen on that day, the patient's told it'll be Thursday morning at 9:30. Patient shows up, go through the exact same steps we do when you check into my traditional clinic. Set of vital signs are taken, and then the patient is placed in the telemedicine room with the on-site nurse. In the oncology practice, I never see a patient just one-on-one. There's always a local healthcare provider in the room. It could be a nurse, it could be a mid-level practitioner, a PA, or a nurse practitioner, or sometimes the referring doctor on that site because there's an acute problem that they want to address. move along to the history, just like we do in a typical clinic visit, and then to the physical examination. This is where I rely on the on-site provider, because some of the physical findings will be reported by that provider.
So in that sense, someone is rarely asked to undress over a telemedicine appointment.
Actually, there are – for the sensitive examination, we're just very careful to drape properly. I'm an internist, and I rely on the stethoscope, and I need to listen to heart sounds and breath sounds to complete my evaluation. And for a female patient, they're draped in a gown, and we're just very careful with regard to modesty issues, just as we would if you met me on the Westwood campus and we were going through an exam.
Do you then have to have an acute ear for what you're listening to if you're listening to it over telemedicine?
Actually, what has happened is the stethoscope that we use was actually tested for diagnostic accuracy, and I can do as well using an electronic stethoscope as I can a traditional stethoscope. Now, that doesn't say anything about the quality of my physical examination skills. It just says the unit, I'll perform the same way with the telemedicine unit as I would with my stethoscope here in town.
And Dr. Nelson, for your visits in psychology, this sort of eliminates the couch. Do they get to still sit on couches and look at the TV?
I wish. But,
how does it work?
You know, it does take a little pre-planning. So I try to send books out. So, you know, the patient on the other hand may look at a book at the same time I am. We fax things back and forth. If a child draws a drawing, they send it over and they're so excited to show it on the screen. So it's those little things that I think help make that connection. But mostly it's the same good interviewing skills you have in person, just talking with the person, saying, what's up with that K-State T-shirt or whatever they're wearing today. It's just the same good skills. One plus for me, though, is the teacher may come in, the school psychologist, the counselor, the coach, all that set of folks may come in and help me better understand what's going on with the child.
And Dr. Doolittle, you have the same advantage of that collaborative atmosphere with the primary care physician or with the attending physician.
That's correct. There's always a primary care team that is responsible for the day-to-day management of that patient, and the communication that goes on between me and that primary care practitioner is just the same as it would be if the patient was located in Kansas City.
Lois writes in to us at centralstandard@kcur.org and says, as a special education teacher in the Kansas City, Kansas School District, I experienced the value of telemedicine in helping kids. It was easy and comfortable to gather parents, teachers, a school nurse, and other school personnel, and the child for a telemed conference. Getting all those folks together for a conversation at the med center would have been difficult, if not impossible, in many cases. Thank you, Lois, for your contribution to the conversation. Dr. Spaulding, what's up with Google Fiber? And how will this help this process? What are you got some pilot programs over there at KU.
Right. So we have a team at the Med Center that's working on how to use the Google Fiber in the Kansas City community. And what we are trying to do is think of how we're going to do healthcare 10 or 20 years from now, because right now there really is not a need for the real high bandwidth that Google is going to place in Kansas City, Kansas, but we think there will be in a few years. So we're trying to think of how people are going to use healthcare down the road and how Google Fiber will assist that. And we think it'll be in the home, quite frankly. And Google, I think, would like to think that it's going to be in the home, because Google is moving toward a cloud-based computing environment, which means you use the internet to pull applications off of the internet. And that's what Google is hoping for. And in terms of healthcare, it's all the things we've talked about in the home. It's much bigger data accumulation from the home, whether it be healthcare data or other data that supports healthcare. And all of that has to travel somehow. And that's what Google Fiber will allow us to do. And then if we want to do the video in the home as well, that'll also make the video so much better and easier to do in the home.
Is speed important in the telemedicine process?
Absolutely, especially with the video. Early on with the phone lines or with the smaller broadband lines, it was really hard to do good quality video. And it's much better now, but Google, at that level of bandwidth, will make it virtually seamless, which is what we're really excited about.
But you've had a couple horror stories, Dr. Doolittle, on slow-moving pictures?
I wouldn't call them horror stories. I think we We had to learn early on that there was a certain amount of ghosting every time somebody moved on the screen. And as a provider, I had to train myself to sit still because the bandwidth option just didn't allow for the kind of video quality we now get with HD. And there was a certain amount of audio-video desynchrony, so we would find ourselves interrupting. As you can tell, I talk rather fast, and if you respond quickly, you wind up interrupting the person from the distant side, so I had to use different skills. Now with HD and a unit that costs 5% of what the first telemedicine unit costs at KU, it's practically broadcast-quality video.
So let's talk about what telemedicine will look like in 20 years from now, when the advent of Google Fiber versus what it was 20 years ago, you're celebrating the 20th anniversary there at the KU Med Center. What do you envision based on the trends that you see, Dr. Spaulding?
The expectation we have is that it's going to be healthcare is going to be available anytime, anywhere. And that's a phrase you'll hear quite commonly in healthcare circles and in the media. That no matter where you are, you'll be able to pull up a provider on either a video phone or some other device in your home, and if the provider's willing, be able to talk to you and see you and maybe look at your vital signs in real time and make a diagnosis. So it'll be mobile. It'll be small. It'll be wearable. A lot of devices are being developed that you actually wear that might track your blood pressure or pulse or something else. There probably will come a time, like you've seen in the movies, where something is under your skin and sending data of some kind. We haven't quite seen that yet, but it's probably going to be here soon.
We've been discussing telemedicine and telehealth and the evolution of both here on Central Standard today with Dr. Ryan Spaulding, director of the Center for Telemedicine and Telehealth at the University of Kansas Medical Center, his colleagues Dr. Gary Doolittle, an oncologist, and Dr. Evelyn Nelson, a psychologist who's also the center's assistant director. Thank you very much for joining us today on Central Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow as we stretch the definition of KC Jazz Ambassadors and look at the musical influences of our city in impoverished countries. Our show is produced by Andreas Lindsay. Up to Date is next with Kansas City's new police chief, Daryl Forte. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.